page is that?
658. Okay, this is actually a new safe I got yesterday. It's not new, it's old, but I ordered it from Israel. This is Rabbi Samson Paul Hirsch's Chumash. If you have, we have it here in English, but I got it in Hebrew. I got a fantastic deal on it. Hmm. If you ever need to order Sfarim, so it seems, if you order from Stymaski in Israel, you get Israeli prices and free express air delivery to America.
Wait, what is this?
Stunning deal. Yes, that's what I ordered.
Wow.
I know Stymaski. It's ibbooks.com or .co.il.
IB books,
that's how I found it. And like this set, which is a 5-volume set, is 5 volumes like this, cost me 262 shekel, including express air delivery.
$60.
About $60, less than $60. And this chumash in English cost $140 plus delivery. So.
Was it IB Books?
IBbooks.co.il or .com or something like that. I can't find it. Email me.
And what's the guy called? What's the place called?
Stymaski.
That's correct.
What?
How do you spell it?
It's STI. I think there's an N, but there might just be an M. STIMMATSKY.
I think it's Stymaski.
No, no N.
No, I think it's
Stymaski.
Where baby?
Do you have to know Hebrew in order to search for anything on there?
Their English is cheap.
It helps.
They list them in Hebrew, not in English.
I think a new search is involved. But yeah, it helps a little. You can Firefox has an extension. One of their things. Do you ever use Firefox?
Oh yeah.
That's cool.
Right.
Firefox has the Stymaski search engine built in. You can get it. Built
right.
In. Yeah. Firefox is much better than. I do not think.
And Google.
Let's go on to
okay. So we are talking about the what Rabbi Hirschier calls the basis of Jewish society, which is the concept of the various different types of forms of charity, which one are entailed in the harvesting of one's fields. And yesterday we talked about the harvest of the grain and what you have to leave over from the harvest of the grain, and for that matter of other types of growth as well, trees and so on and so forth. But now, specifically in verse 10, we're going to speak about what happens when you harvest your vines, meaning your grapevines. It says, V'chai mechol lo tzolel, you shouldn't take the deformed grapes from your vineyard. Deformed grapes are supposed to leave for a poor person. You don't go in clusters, but grow single on the vine. Those grapes are supposed to be left for the poor people to collect and for them to make wine with them. Perekamachol is very similar to what we talked about yesterday by grain, by pale, when we spoke about leket, stuff that you forget, stuff which falls, you now have to go back and pick it up. So the same thing, if you forget grapes on, or grape clusters for that matter, on a tree, you now have to go back and get them. Once you pass by them, you have to leave them for the poor people. And as it says here, lo nivla gerasazovo sov, you should leave them for the poor person and for the stranger. Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am the God, your Lord. Now, I don't know in many of these psukim where we find the word ger, which literally means ger. In other words, doesn't translate well to English. Literally, it translates as sojourner. I don't know what exactly it's referring to. It can be referring either to a ger tzedek, meaning a ger who accepted upon himself, the convert who accepted upon himself all 630 commandments, or it could be referring to also a ger toshav, an individual sent upon himself to keep the Noahide laws, and therefore is allowed by us to live within the land of Israel, and we have a mitzvah to sustain that person, meaning to provide him with an income and sustenance. So therefore, it's not necessarily referring to a person who is a complete ger, although, generally speaking, such a person would be impoverished at the time that the land of Israel was divided into tribes, because not being a member of any specific tribe, he would have no specific parcel of land. Right? So therefore he would be likely to be poor, just like the Levites were poor. The Levites were poor because they also had no specific allocated parcels of land. So therefore, it might be talking about a full convert, but also might be talking about the fellow who is a partial convert who is living in the land of Israel, but also has no specific portion in the land, and therefore he is impoverished as well. Okay? Regardless, whoever it's referring to, whether it's a near the convert, a complete convert, a convert who is a partial convert, the bottom line is that this person is also poor. He's just like the Ani is poor, the Ger is also. The Ger. Are you giving a shoe now?
No.
The Ger is also poor, and you must leave these things. Ani Hashem Elokeichem. I am the God, your Lord. Now, Rashi says a very interesting thing here. I don't know if you guys can bring it down. He says, why does it say here, I am the God, your Lord? Does the article bring down what Rashi says?
It says it here, I don't know. Yeah.
No, not from, I'm saying in the article in English.
Oh.
On the bottom, in verse 10.
Yeah.
What does he say?
I'm Hashem, your God.
It was the commentary at the bottom.
No.
Nope.
So usually when it says, I am God, your Lord, what it means is that I know what's going on. In other words, if you say, whoops, shucks, there were no deformed grapes. Or, whoops, shucks, I was so efficient, I managed to collect everything. God knows. God is going to get you. You should know that God is watching, particularly when it comes to the poor and downtrodden, God is directly concerned. We find this throughout Chumash. It's a consistent theme. Wherever you find people who are downtrodden, where people are poor, people impoverished, God is particularly out to preserve their dignity and to interfere on their behalf. So therefore, it very much stresses in mitzvahs of this sort that you should know with whom you are taking up a fight if you don't take off the proper tithes which you're supposed to give to the poor people, or you don't leave these portions which they are supposed to get. Okay? So this, as Rabbi Hirsch says, again, is the basis of Jewish society, the concept of charity, not just with money, but with everything a person owns at every step of the way. That's an important point to make, which is, you have to give charity, not just at one point in the process. You can't say, well, you know what, I will save my charity, my charitable contribution, for after everything is harvested. So after everything is in the silo, after I've made it all into food. At every step along the way, in order to give you the proper ownership and legitimacy in owning your produce, there has to be a direct and concurrent mitzvah which you're performing in giving the relinquishing part of it to the poor people. Otherwise, you don't have yourself the legitimate right to harvest and go on and continue to sort of take into your own house. So this teaches us one of the fundamental principles of Judaism, which is that everything on earth really belongs to God, ultimately. Not everything we have is just something which we have been given jurisdiction over, but it's not owned by us. And therefore, since God decrees it should belong to the poor people, even though a moment ago it belonged to me, now it automatically belongs to a person who is poor. Okay? So far, so good. That's easy enough, right? Now, we come to the next mitzvah. The next mitzvah is it's the beginning of verse 11. Lo tiknov, do not steal. What are the Ten Commandments about stealing?
Don't do it.
Very good. Now, according to the rabbis, when it says in the Ten Commandments, don't steal, what's it referring to?
Kidnapping.
Excellent. How do the rabbis know that that's talking about kidnapping?
It says don't steal here.
Okay. That's one answer, but not the one the rabbis give. What do the rabbis say? How do we know? Right, so there, but in Ten Commandments, it's about major, generally capital crimes. So it would be incongruous to have in that list the prohibition on stealing money, which is not a capital crime. But Rabbi Hirschman said another very interesting thing. He says the commandments in the Ten Commandments is phrased in the singular. Lo tignov, don't steal. The commandment here in Parshas Kedoshim is phrased in the plural. Also in English, you can't say just don't steal. It means you, masses, you, or the public, should not steal. Forgetting about the kidnapping interpretation for a minute, what would be the difference of approach between an individual commandment not to steal and a collective commandment not to steal?
That's the reason, because so Moshe could, after the Chet HaEgel, go to Hashem and say, look, you only told me to do these things, not everybody else, and so it was, everything was in the singular.
That's cute.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah. Because Moshe Rabbeinu says, the Ten Commandments were given to me as an individual, so therefore the Jews were not liable for them.
Right.
Well, that's cute and sticky, but that's not really their simple understanding, right?
Right.
Maybe looking at just the way society works, don't feel, you know, masses feel little things, but see the big things, the people, doesn't happen so often.
Very good. What Rabbi Hirsch said, excellent. Rabbi
Hirsch,
I have a suggestion for you. Instead of sitting here and having this in constant danger, that way you can protect them.
Sharing is sharing.
But he doesn't care.
So if these kids are not poor enough, they don't count. So Rabbi Hirsch makes this point, very beautiful point, actually, which is that this process over here is addressing society. It's not addressing individuals. And he's saying there's such a thing, and we know find it from the generation of the flood, as a seething society. And there's such a thing as individual set, and such a thing as a seething society.
I'm sorry, you're saying this cost security is meant for everybody as a society, given the whole Torah? Like, why is that such a...
No, he's saying there's two levels of set. For example, there's the theft of going and breaking somebody's house and robbing their silver candlesticks, right? But then there's the theft of walking into the school office and taking a pencil.
Gezel and Gana.
No, just the scale, right? Okay. So there's certain societies in which it's considered to be, the big things are considered to be unethical, but the small things are considered to be pranks, right? Innocent kinds of...
Like killing your text.
What?
Like cheating
taxes, right?
But the Torah views that if you steal a penny or steal $1,000, it's the same thing, no?
Yeah, but how do we know that? From here, as we said. The Torah is saying is not just individual acts of crime, but also those things which are as a society might become acceptable are also forbidden to you.
How do you get that from this passage?
As it says in plural.
Well, you can get so many things from that.
You could. You have another approach?
No, I'm just saying.
Come up with something. That's what he said.
There's a lot of things that society could steal, though, right? It doesn't just have to be kidnapping.
That's true.
We could be talking about in trading, right? Like one country's trading with another. That's really more of a societal thing than individual.
Mm-hmm.
Stealing food.
So if you think about it, in the context of our Kedusha discussion, right? So what really goes more antithetical to holiness than anything else is the concept of a corrupt society. A single act of theft is not an act of corruption. It's a crime, right? But an act of a constant low-level burn of corruption is a much more serious thing. It's an interesting question Rabbi Yosef Engel has in Halacha. Rabbi Yosef was a great thinker, a halachic thinker of the early 20s. What happened now?
It fell?
It's the 5-second rule. Pick it up quick.
I just read about that in the Consumer Reports. They said it doesn't work.
No.
But it
doesn't
work.
Here.
It does when you're that age.
Go. Have fun. Unfortunately, I'm only giving one share today, so.
Maybe I should work in Austin now.
Yeah.
Rabbi, does your wife think you spoil your kids?
She doesn't know about all this. She's not home. That's why I have to bring them. What do you think? The Rabbi Yosef Engel has an interesting discussion where he discusses our halachic issue. What's worse, a small aveira committed many times or one large aveira? And the question.
Small many times.
Well, he brings proofs on both sides of the equation, but. Yes,
it's
that's
interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting in terms of raising children.
Mm-hmm.
Rabbi, the issue is small pebble. If you think about an avera and a pebble to compensate for each one of, a really big one is a big stone and a small one is a small pebble. The question is, most of us think doing that really one terrible thing is worse. But if you think about, like, doing tshuva, if all year you produce these stones, these pebbles, whatever, the problem with all the small ones is you can't go and find them. You can't come in and collect them and make restitution for them. because it's just your life is littered. If it's one big one, you can find that one stone. You can go to the person. You can say, look, I'm really sorry. I did this.
That's assuming you did the tshuva.
You can't even do tshuva if your world is littered with small pebbles. There's no way to do tshuva. You can't find them.
I can tell you once. One of the most impressive experiences I ever had in Orson Mayer, the guy called the office once and said he has a bunch of halachic questions. Several years ago, the guy called the office and said a bunch of halachic questions. He wants to come to Orson Mayer and sit down with somebody and ask some halachic questions. And they sent them to me. So he came on a Sunday morning and he had a whole list. This fellow became Baal Teshuva, I guess, in his early, late 20s, early 30s, and he had a whole list of all the teenage pranks he had been involved in when he was a kid, and he wanted all the ones which caused, you know, financial loss to his neighbors, to his kids, his friends' parents, and things like that. And he went one by one through all the scenarios and asked me how to do tshuva on each and every one of these issues. Boy, was I impressed, because I am nowhere near that right. Here am I giving advice, you know, to this guy, and I am nowhere near this amount of, you know, sitkas in me. But that was really, really impressive that he came, actually, and, you know, he had a list of everything. And, you know, he tracked down people he hadn't seen in many, many years, you know, and their parents were gone to Florida or dead. So he tracked down, you know, the next of kin in order to try and make restitution to all these people. I was really amazed.
He gave them money?
What?
He gave them money?
Yeah.
Couldn't he have just given tzedakah?
No. What does that help?
More money was even in your hand.
No, it doesn't work that way. If you can't atone for a sin by doing it in a mitzvah.
Sure, you can. If you have a lashma
if there's no option and you can't find the person from whom you stole or whom you damaged, then you just give money to a tzedakah in that community. But you did that damage. But you have to really first try and find that person.
What kind of damages are these?
What
kind of damages?
You know, he bangs into somebody's car. He was driving his car late at night. He bangs into scratched off somebody's mirror. Or, you know, he bangs it while he was backing up. He backed up into somebody's fence and knocked it down.
Or
stuff
he drove
like
into somebody's driveway and knocked over the bushes.
Right.
Hey, I think so. I told you that.
Okay. I think he was in Queens, actually. So that actually is this case is very impressive that this fellow actually made the list and came to try and do tshuva on each and one of these things. But Reish Vegel has an interesting proof to the position which you said, which is he says that there's halacha that if somebody is in danger on Yom Kippur and he has to eat, so you have in front of you pork, which is already, you know, it's dead, you know, it's in the supermarket. And you have the opportunity of giving him pork or slaughtering a cow and giving him fresh meat to eat. So pork is only a prohibition, a negative command in the Torah, but to slaughter an animal, Yom Kippur, is a capital crime. It's liable to courage, to excision for slaughtering a cow on Yom Kippur. So what are you supposed to do? Well, you're supposed to give him the pork, you're supposed to slaughter the cow. So I believe it's one of the Mishnayim, the Ran, who says that you're supposed to slaughter the cow rather than give him the pork. Why? Because the small avera, eating piece after piece after piece of pork is worse than the one big avera of going and slaughtering the cow on Yom Kippur, which is essentially this issue which you
couldn't
raise.
It be also because by slaughtering the cow, you're slaughtering the cow, but then you're eating the kosher. Like you're doing an avera, but to do a mitzvah.
Well, you're doing a bigger avera, right?
But with the pork, you're just doing the avera. There's no mitzvah involved at all.
No, the mitzvah. There is a mitzvah of saving a life.
Cool. I agree, but for completely different reasons. Well, I'll let it off. If there's one big avera, then you say it's the wrong thing. The whole thing is recognition. If it's a whole bunch of small ones, then people, like you said, walk into the office taking pens and like, no one...
Blah, blah.
The problem isn't the actual avera. The problem is the realization that this is an avera. Like if I go and I stab someone to death, if I'm the CEO of an energy company in America, let's say, and all the fraud everywhere will make everyone go bankrupt, right? Everyone will look and say that's wrong, and society will deem that a bad thing. Society at large won't have to term over it. And they'll be able to recognize, right, this is wrong, therefore it must be punished. Therefore, as if it's a whole bunch of small things, there it goes, the pencil, this and that, and it's the whole society, therefore, thinks you lose the vision. And
right, in other words, it raises the bar of what's considered to be corruption.
Yes.
In other words, it becomes, if you, a whole lot of things are able to get under the radar screen, right, and then the society becomes more and more corrupt, as opposed to dramatic sins, which will generally shock society and not cause people to follow them.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Is there a value equated to each one? For example, one very big versus the small. You know, if you do 32 small ones, but then you get 33, now you've gone over the line.
It never gets that exact.
So
it's a judgment call.
It's a judgment call, and so there's no defining value. For example, if he had 2 pieces of pork as opposed to 40 pieces of pork, and that seems like the 2 pieces of pork.
Right, but there is no, that's the point. There is no such demarcation line.
It's
all,
it's all subjective.
No, usually you have to rip it to get to open it, right?
Yes.
This time it's not so red, I'm going to just lift it off. Because first I ripped around.
Wow. Hey, that is magic.
How do you know if you've done the right thing or not? Or if you've done the worst thing or not?
Concerning what?
Concerning the big bear versus small. Which is worse?
Well, the guidelines are not awful. Like the Ron says that you're supposed to slaughter the animals instead of giving the guy pork to eat.
So there are
guidelines, yeah. So there are guidelines, broad guidelines, in general, but there aren't hard and fast rules as to where the demarcation line is. But that's the point which Rabbi Hirsch makes in this passage. And about the next couple of things here, look at the next couple of things. It says, don't steal. Do not, how does he translate those chashu? Don't cheat, don't deceive.
Don't deny it.
And do not lie. A person to another. These are all low-level crimes, right? And so he says here, it's couched in plural, right, as opposed to individually, because it's saying, listen, these things, these white-collar crimes, so to speak, are things which are very likely to cause society to become much more corrupt. And therefore, you have to pay special attention to them, because otherwise, they're going to have a devastating, but somewhat indirect, or perhaps the better word is non-apparent impact on society. You have to be very careful about that. Okay. So again, it says that there are three things in this pasuk: los is los ignobu, don't steal; los chachashu, do not deny; los shaku ishvamiso, and do not tell falsehood. And all these things are ishvamiso, a person to his fellow person. In other words, don't do any of these things between one man and another man. And he says, the way Rabbi Hirsch puts it here, he says, the previous verse laid down the foundation of the mitzvahs of society, meaning charity. Here come the psukim, the verses, several verses on the social mitzvahs of the holy nation, the ones you just mentioned. And he says, there are later on, even in this parsha, we're going to have ones which are in the single phraseology. If you take a look in verse 13, Pasuk Yud Gimel, there it says, Lo tashokas re'achov v'lo tigzol. Right? It says there in the singular, don't cheat your friends, singular, and do not rob your friends. Right? So those are going back to individuals, but these mitzvahs here are societal mitzvahs, and that's why they're couched in plural.
How do you know it's society?
What?
How do you know
it's plural?
But you just said singular.
No, the next verse is singular. Okay. Next verse is singular. So this verse is plural, the next verse is singular. In fact, there's between theft and robbery, right? We all know that. Theft is something which is much less of a confrontational thing. It's much more of a secret thing, or it's a repetitious thing. So therefore, it's something which, again, from Rabbi Hirsch's perspective, is more of a societal issue Although, of course, Geneva also applies to, you know, burglary, an armed, and the moment you have a weapon or something like that, it usually becomes robbery, and therefore that's here's the point, a lower level crime, but one which has perhaps more of an impact on society.
That's why it's punished more, yeah?
What?
Pickpocketing someone in the Gemara is punished more than going with someone with a knife.
That's correct.
You're hiding, yeah?
Yes. The, and when he goes on, he says,
pickpocketing more than what?
Because he denies that Hashem's watching
him. He says, as we said before, it's not possible to say that it's talking this verse about large sins, because those will never be done by the totality of the people, by the totality of society. And not even the majority of society will ever do the major sins. In every national society, there will only be specific isolated incidences. Because the general society automatically suppresses those major crimes with its national political power. Here it's talking about those types of theft, of falsehood, and a false oath, which can penetrate the entire commercial and social fiber of society. Not only that, but they also can be the character of the country. You know, you have certain, you know, the classic banana republic, I'm not talking about the store, the banana republic type country in which everybody is corrupt, right? That's the way, everybody knows the four store banana republics and South American countries are called banana republics.
No.
Are you aware of that?
No.
So the actually was the concept of banana republic, or the I don't know exactly where the term came from, but it means countries which corruption was a way of life. In other words, if you want to get anything done, you have to bribe everybody, every single official which you met.
The irony of that.
What? Socially acceptable, so that becomes, it takes away the entire embarrassment of this crime. And if, on the contrary, somebody who can actually cheat the government or cheat his fellow man is considered to be somebody who's worthy of praise and honor. The guys who don't cheat the system are considered to be the guys who are the losers.
That's so true.
Right?
True
so that, what?
Very true today.
It's true today?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Someone's truly honest, they get made fun of all the time.
It's not true. It is?
Oh, yeah, it is.
You think if someone comes up and says, just take my income taxes, I fold them in as much as I can, and I pay Uncle Sam everything he asks for, you always look at him and call him a schmuck. Come on.
Yeah. In the long run, he's going to be better off.
Yeah, people look at
him. Or if someone waits for the walk signal, even though there's no cars.
There is a famous opinion by the Judge Learned Hand, who was a judge, I think, distinguished American justice from the 1930s. That was his name, Learned Hand. So he said that it is not more patriotic to pay more income taxes. Income tax is not like charity to government. He said you should take every loophole you can possibly take. Interesting perspective, right? If you want to give charity on your own, but don't pay more taxes to the government.
He's a Republican.
Now, is it, what?
He's a Republican.
I don't know. I really don't. That part I don't know.
Hello, can you give taxes as my...
No.
Wow.
Because you don't know what portion of your taxes is actually going to fund what governmental activity. Well, you know, the money you're giving to the government is just going to support the invasion of Iraq, which might be a worthy cause, because it's not Shaka.
But what they do with it is their own, whatever they want to do, that's fine. The fact that we actually want to give, thank you. The fact that we actually want to give something in here. The fact that we want to give stuff, if we give the stuff to the government for the right purposes, whatever they do with it, that's their own choice.
It can only be allowed a maximum. To assume that percentage of your income tax which goes to welfare would be considered to be struck.
In New York City.
That's a minuscule amount. It's very, very small. Most of the government's taxes goes to defense and to running the government itself.
Social Security.
That's true to the government.
What?
Social Security, that's
not stuck, huh?
Supporting
people.
That's stuck, my sir.
Many people who have Social Security are very quite well to do.
Mm-hmm.
Social Security is an entitlement. It's not charity. Right?
Yeah.
They already paid out Social Security.
Not really.
Some pay
for clients for sure.
When you pay Social Security, you're paying it for yourself.
Right.
It just happens to be that you can check it later on, and other people are paying it, but technically you're paying.
They pick up food stamps and then receive.
Okay, so really just have a check. It's interesting, by the way, it's interesting. What? You don't have any more money? You spent $2 already? I have a shocking idea. Go drink some water.
It's really
I
want
some water. Isn't that enough to get a soda? How much is a soda? That doesn't count as a stalker. I have.
Let's
just okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
It's okay.
Okay.
Is it enough? Yeah,
it's enough. It's more than enough. How much do
I have to take away? I don't know. You'll find out when you bring the machine.
Don't
give the machine extra.
Yeah, I can give
the machine extra. It's not a mitzvah. That's where all the money goes. There's an interesting law in America, which one rabbi once told me about, which is that if you are a clergyman, you are a conscientious objector to the Social Security system. It seems like there actually were, when the Social Security system was introduced, the conscientious objectors on religious grounds to the government supporting senior citizens. Don't ask me why, but there was such a thing. So therefore, there is a law on the books that clergymen are allowed to opt out of the Social Security system.
Nice.
It's a one-time in your life decision, which you can never take back. So if you say that you're philosophically opposed to the Social Security system, you don't have to pay any Social Security taxes, but you won't get Social Security when you retire.
Get it either way.
What?
You won't get it anyway.
Everyone's going to
become clergymen.
So there was one rabbi I once met who actually said he held that even though he wasn't actually philosophically opposed to the Social Security system, but he held once the government had such a loophole, he's entitled to take advantage of it. And that's what he did. He actually opted out of the Social Security system and didn't pay any Social Security taxes.
Is that dishonest?
What?
Is that dishonest?
That's a good question. He actually obviously ruled that it was not, because since it is something which the government allows, so therefore he was...
It allows him under certain conditions. He didn't meet that condition. Then
well, I don't think you have to sign the document which says that I have a philosophical...
But a show knows. We have
true, a but that's the question. When you don't have to sign a document, but rather the government gives you the right to opt out, you don't have to actually write an essay saying why I object to the Social Security system, but you rather have the right to opt out of it, so therefore he held it was not dishonest.
You think your students are included?
What?
You think your students are included?
Maybe.
If you feel that your government's doing something unjust or opposite to Torah law, can you opt out of it just because?
Yeah. But it can't just be a feeling.
Well, no, yeah.
I mean, look, the government in Russia, they used to draft Jewish kids into the army at the age of 13 for 25 years, right? So that was not, the Jews tried as much as they possibly could to get out of this, right? It's not really a just law. In fact, there's an interesting issue concerning the Vilna Gaon. Everybody knows who Vilna Gaon was. So the question what his last name is, was his last name Kramer or Landau? Because at the time, there were strict quotas on Jews getting married. So there's a question as to whether his parents were legally married or not. They actually had a Jewish ceremony, but they didn't have the question of whether they had a civilly recognized ceremony or not. And I think, depending on whether they were married or not married, he either had his father or mother's last name. So obviously the fact that the non-Jews had a decree that Jews shouldn't get married did not hinder the Jews from doing so nonetheless. So that's obviously a just law of some sort. Some people actually hold that income tax is not a just law, but generally speaking, any law which is fair, and applies to everybody equally, but doesn't single out any specific segment of society, is considered to be a fair law, and one is not allowed to try and get out of that. The interesting thing, once we're on the topic of taxes, is that there is one of the major problems in the Jewish community is that almost everybody has illegal immigrants working for them as household help. Now, this is not just in the Jewish society. We know that there were several candidates for Attorney General of the United States who had to turn down the position, including one of the chief judges of the state of New York, Judge Kimber Wood, because they had illegal immigrants as household help. And it's not just a question, even they're illegal, if you don't pay their taxes, if you don't deduct taxes from their wages, and if you don't declare their earnings, then you are, in theory, in violation of the tax code. And on the other hand, if you do declare their income and you do pay taxes, you will never find any household help.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, it is a big bind what to do under such situations.
No, you'll find help, you just have to gross them up.
What?
You'll find help, you just have to gross them up.
Yes, but it's...
pay 10 times as much.
Yeah, and...
No. I mean, I dealt with this issue. So, it's just pure economics. I mean,
pay them what they get, plus taxes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They net the same, because there's a market, and it, you know...
So you come back, you won't be able to afford to get the household help. That's
can they work since they're illegal?
What?
They can't work since they're illegal. There's only, you can't get paid for
some. No, some of them are illegal.
They want to get paid off the books.
And you have the question also in Jewish...
And then you have the issue of
in
the
Muncie,
illegal.
Yeah, both. Muncie people get paid under the table.
Right, and then you have a question of, let's say you go into your local farm store, and he says, well, if you pay me in cash or by check, then it costs you less than if you pay me by credit card. Because then I won't charge you tax. So this is a very interesting question in halacha, whether you're allowed to A, employ such an employee, B, shop in such a store. So I'm going to tell you my opinion, which is completely biased, because I have to justify my own practices. So I'm giving you that caveat ahead of time, so you should know.
It says tax included on the wall.
So you should know, as a lishkas, but I'm sorry. So you should know my bias before I actually give you my perspective on the matter, and I may well be wrong. But it seems to me, in terms of the tax issue, in terms of your household employees and such like, you're not allowed to lie. But you don't have to, halakhically, you're not allowed to lie on a form. But you don't, there is no requirement, according to halacha, to disclose things which the form does not ask you to disclose. Meaning, for example, if when you file income tax, you file the 1040, whatever it is, I actually have never filled one out in my life because the accountant does it for me, but I'm assuming that there is no line on it which says, did you have any household help this year which you paid X amount of dollars or which you now owe their taxes? If there was such a line, so you would not be allowed to lie, of course, and say, no, I didn't have such help. But if there is no such line on the form, then you're allowed to sign the form as is, and there is no actual falsehood involved. Similarly, when you go to a store and buy something, it's not your obligation to take care of the taxes. It is the store owner's obligation to take care of the taxes. So you don't have to assume that he is a criminal. If he actually decides to be a criminal, that's not your responsibility, that's his responsibility.
Couldn't
he be listening ever? No, it's not listening ever. They're supposed to be Messiah or Bavela. Listening ever is if he's not going to be able to sell his article to anybody else except for you. And, you know, sooner or later he's probably going to sell it even if you don't walk in the door. Right?
So based on that, if you knowingly go into the store and knowingly take cash and knowingly that the store owner...
I believe so.
We'll pay the taxes for the items that you purchased.
No, the question is how exactly, if at all, he'll pay them. And I had a friend who's an accountant who said to me, although I don't know if it's true, but it's a nice thing to say to me, he said that sometimes, even though they don't pay sales tax on it, even though they won't collect sales tax, they will pay income tax on it. What?
For their profits.
For their profits, right.
It's not
this buyer's obligation to pay the sales tax?
I don't think so. I think it's the seller's obligation to collect it. Except now they have a law in the state of New York that on your income tax form every year, you either have to declare all your out-of-state purchases or pay a lump sum towards, you know, what you bought, you know, from the internet and catalogs from out-of-state.
from the internet?
New York State is the first state to enact this, yes.
California.
What?
California.
Report
so
that.
You can't even buy tax-free off the internet anymore?
Well, you're going to have to do some sort of, no. You have to, but obviously, everybody pays a lump sum, whatever it is. It's much less than you would actually pay if you actually itemize. But it seems that it's the seller or the state's obligation to come after you. If they don't come after you, you don't have to volunteer. And this comes back to another issue, which is...
Oh, wait, then stay on that.
No, I want to say it. For example, many years ago when I was living in Illinois, it was officially a law that you actually have to declare all your out-of-state purchases and pay tax on it. And for amount of people in Illinois who did that every year, numbered under 1,000. Right? Some extremely, extremely small people. And you have to wonder about these 1,000 people whether they were safe. But at the government at that time, this was way before big internet purchases, the government of the state of Illinois did not prosecute it. They didn't go after these people and say, oh, you have to pay up. And this is an interesting facet of halacha, which also has to do with the speed limit, right? When you're traveling down on a highway, you're really not supposed to go be higher than the speed limit, right? You're breaking a law. If you will go higher than the speed limit, that night in Shemesh Bon Etzi, you should have to say, al-chet shechotonu lefanecha, that we went faster than the speed limit, right?
Yep.
Isn't that the case? So why don't you have to say al-chet shechotonu lefanecha? Maybe you do. But why don't most people do it? Because the assumption is a law which is not enforced is not considered to be a law.
But it is enforced.
No. Actually, there was a rabbi in Baltimore, Rabbi Heinemann, who went to the police and he asked them, at what point do you enforce the speed limit? And they said to him,
10%
above.
10%
of 10
miles.
10% of 10 miles?
I'm asking you.
I think he said 10%. What?
From 10 miles.
Okay, I heard 10%, maybe it's 10 miles. So I remember the number 10. So he said on that basis, he ruled for his constituency that it's not considered to be speeding if you go less than 10% over the speed limit, because they don't enforce it. And the same thing is true about the sales tax law, right? If the state of Illinois is not going after the millions and millions of people who are doing this, then that's not considered to be the legal standard you have to observe.
What about file sharing?
What?
What about copyrighted music files?
No, they went after it. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Before, when things were on cassette tapes, so the companies never went after these violations.
People did it all the time,
right? And when it came to CDs, also people didn't, I don't think they even went after them then.
No.
But
no.
Now, with Napster, they started going after, now it becomes lawsuits to package.
So Hashem doesn't punish you unless they're going after
it? Right, because Dina Malchus Adina, actually Dina Malchus Adina works. The law of the land is based on what the law
is. But
isn't
it stealing regardless of whether the law of the land is?
No, only if they're the last of you.
No, but I'm saying if I steal someone's
stuff.
I have to come back tomorrow because Rabbi Kellen was waiting outside, Thursday. But I'm going to speak about that photocopy. If you mind, at the beginning of sales, about photocopying article books. Even though it says at the beginning of every article book, if you photocopy this book, you will be put to death. Have you ever noticed that warning?
Yeah.
So it's going to be put to death?
Yeah.
Strictly enforced.
So we will speak about that on Thursday.
The first time I saw that,